Chapter 34. Rouge. Rouge called her Mombele back to her hand. As she watched the nasty glowing ball of blight that apparently represented Akuji's soul dissolve into dust, she felt almost suspended above the scene, as if she was watching and not participating. It was the most surreal experience she had ever had while playing Veritas Online, and she briefly wondered if killing the unkillable Lich Lord had broken something in the program. Then she snapped back into full immersion, and was instantly overpowered by the smell of mold and rot, mingled with the sweet scent of frangipani and coconut that had accompanied Aspen's full-bore life attack. Her whole body hurt, and notifications of damage, as well as level ups and skill increases were still scrolling by in the corner of her vision, moving so quickly that the only thing she was sure of was that killing Akuji had pushed her up at least 10 levels. Rouge sent her Mombele back to her inventory almost on autopilot, then found herself toppling sideways, with the ground coming at her head with terrifying speed. Strong arms caught her as her feet slipped from her stirrups, and Mott's rumbling bass reached her ears as her vision swam. "It's all right. I have you. Hang on, Zoe," he murmured, and she distantly wondered if she'd logged out without noticing, because her dad never slipped up and used her real name in-game. Wally's hard beak bumped her chest as Mott swung her limp body into his embrace, and the ostrich warbled in concern. "It's okay, Wall," she slurred. "Be fine in a minute." Her eyes flickered closed and then popped open again. "Silas. Silas. I'm okay, I think," the blessedly familiar voice replied a moment later, sounding as shocked and disoriented as Rouge felt. "I was hurt, but I think Aspen healed me." The bat hesitated, and Rouge felt her small friend's light weight settle onto her chest. "Rouge? Aspen won't talk to me and he looks really strange. Is he okay?" Rouge blinked hard, jerking around in her father's grasp, trying to see what Silas meant. Mott sounded concerned as he said, "I'll let you down, but hold on to me." Distractedly, Rouge nodded, and a moment later her feet hit the ground. She stumbled and probably would have fallen, but she was firmly bracketed by Mott on one side and Codswallop on the other. Her fingers dove deep into warm dusty feathers, while her right hand closed on the hard metal of Mott's gauntlet. With their assistance, she managed to look behind her, where Aspen had been standing, before every living thing in the area suddenly decided to grow at a pace she would have sworn was impossible. Kor and Sumi were already standing near Aspen's rigid form, and the towering goat, who stood at least half a foot taller than before, nuzzled Aspen's hair with concern he was usually too curmudgeonly to display. Sumi was tapping at Aspen's boot with her forelegs, and the arachnid's jerky movements betrayed her worry to anyone who knew her. "What's going on?" Rouge asked, her voice rough. She cleared her throat and tried again. "Aspen." Aspen's eyes, now nearly as golden as Silas, were still fixed on Akuji's corpse. Reluctantly, Rouge turned to look at the macabre sight. Plants had sprung up all around the Lich Lord, and bloated vines wound through his bones, as if his skeleton had been standing there for 100 years. His skull leaned back, and a tangle of creepers protruded from his jaw. One side of his lower mandible had broken loose, and it dangled, resting on a cluster of blooming flowers that Rouge vaguely recognized as evening primrose, a night-blooming flower that grew around her yard in the real world. One of Akuji's dangling arms twitched, and for a terrible moment, Rouge thought the undead king hadn't actually been defeated, in spite of the notifications that still glowed red on her interface. Then a green snake peeked out shyly at her from between the radius and ulna, and she shuddered and looked back toward Aspen. As far as she could tell, he hadn't moved, and she began to feel a twinge of apprehension. "Is he injured? I don't see any blood." Mott gently transferred Rouge's right hand to Codswallop's side and stepped around their motionless friend. His helmet vanished, and she could see that her dad's expression was as disturbed as Rouge felt. "I don't see anything," he rumbled. He reached out and set a firm hand on Aspen's shoulder. There was no reaction. "He's gone too deep." Sumi's voice startled Rouge, and the girl looked down to see that the spider had dug a shallow hole in the ground beside Aspen's foot. Something brown was visible in the small pit, and as Rouge watched, it shifted deeper into the soil. "What is that?" Rouge knelt shakily, reaching out to touch the thing. It was rough and fibrous, and she realized it was some kind of root. Following it back up, she saw with rising horror that it had punched out of Aspen's boot. The leather was splayed open, and other root tendrils were trying to emerge. Rouge looked at Sumi. What do you mean, he's gone too deep? The spider shifted uncomfortably. When Gina accepted Aspen as her champion, it affected us too, since we are bonded to his soul. Gina gave us the choice of staying with him or leaving. When we decided to stay, she told us to watch over him because there were some risks to what he was becoming. Rouge gritted her teeth, struggling back to her feet with her hand on Codswallop's helpfully outstretched neck. Bridget, what did you do? Sumi went on. Gina said that Aspen would eventually be able to communicate with all living things, and that his mere presence would increase their ability to allocate system resources exponentially. In essence, if he linked with too many spirits at once, his soul would merge with theirs and they would become one organism rather than many. Okay, Rouge said slowly. So, if she told you what to watch for, did she tell you how to fix it? We were supposed to stop it from happening in the first place. Kor sounded irritated, as usual, but there was an audible thread of fear behind his words. I can try biting him. Silas sounded almost hopeful. When I was little and I got distracted, he used to tug my ear tufts so I'd pay attention. I don't think that would work this time, Silas, Sumi said gently. I did try poking his shin with my limbs, but I sensed no change. Is he lost then? Silas stretched her wings wide, managing to bridge the gap between Rouge and Aspen until she could drop down to Aspen's tattooed hand, which clutched at Stick. The skin of the hand was beginning to look more bark-like than just tanned and weathered, while the staff too was growing roots from its base, and the leaves at its top were looking more and more like real foliage. Rouge felt a tickle at the back of her brain as she saw Aspen's tattoos shimmer and shift. Her right hand itched, and she glanced down at it, though she could only see the leather pickpocket gloves she was wearing. Thinking fast, she vanished the gloves into her inventory and held up her own hand, which glowed bright gold today. She'd noticed that the color changed daily, which made sense since it was a cosmetic item, but today's color was eerily similar to the current inhuman color of Aspen's eyes. Rouge raised her hand in front of Aspen's eyes and snapped her fingers. Aspen! Hey, Aspen! Wakey, wakey! No response. Not even a blink. Everyone else was looking at her now, and she shrugged. This tat had a really weird description. It said it would light your way in even the darkest of times, and it didn't make any sense for it to be an item personalized for me. I mean, I can see in the dark, right? But maybe it's not for me? She rolled her eyes. All the tattoos are for Aspen, so why not this one too? Sumi clicked her fangs thoughtfully. I hate to suggest it, but it was quite dark while we were fighting Akuji. Perhaps it was meant for that time instead? Rouge's heart sank a little. Sumi was right. It had been literally pitch black when she was surrounded by the wraiths, and even she hadn't been able to see. It had also hurt like hell, even with her low pain settings. Would the evil spirits have been banished if she'd just taken off her darned glove? She shook her head. Her name wasn't Harry freaking Potter, and the wraiths weren't dementors, to be driven away by some overpowered patronus. Look, she said, I can't explain it, but I'm sure I'm right. But how do I make this thing work? She shook her hand violently, but the tattoo just sat there on low-key glow. Mott set a hand on her shoulder, and she looked back at him. His face was creased in the, I'm about to figure out who done it, that she always hated to see when they watched mystery vids together. Now, however, it gave her hope. You said it would light your way, correct? Mott asked, musing aloud. She nodded. Then let it light your way, he said. It's darkest when you close your eyes. She may have glared at him just a little, but she just sighed and shut her eyes. Nothing happened except that she could hear her own breathing, and she was about to open her eyes again and tell Mott to try again, when his large hand grasped her own and raised it in front of her eyes. Rouge gasped. Somehow, the light of the tattoo was even brighter than it had been with her eyes open. As she twisted the appendage, making the light shift and glimmer, it began to glow brighter and brighter. When it reached the space where Aspen was standing, two more lights flickered into being. Aspen's eyes gleamed, and then misty tendrils and strands unfurled like tiny roots and vines, as if the eyes were seeds. All around them, more and more lights appeared, and Rouge could see that some scuttled or wriggled, while others swayed peacefully in an unfelt breeze. It was the most beautiful and surreal thing she'd ever seen, and she wondered if this was what a network of neurons would look like. Or perhaps the connections in a computer program. Ones and zeros mingled to create cause and effect, which in turn yielded something like life. Rouge reached out and touched one of the thickest strands of light coming from Aspen's eyes. It plucked like a harp string, and all of the threads attached to it quivered as well, with smaller and smaller tremors as the force passed on decreased, until it vanished in a diminuendo. "Whoa," she whispered, and did it again. "Harder." This time, the string snapped from the strength of her action, and the symphony of chords jangled discordantly. The light of Aspen's eyes flickered, and she wondered if he had just blinked. She switched to a strand leading from the other eye, and did it again. All of the lights went out, except for the glow of her hand, which faded until Rouge was left in the darkness behind her eyes again. She blinked her eyes open as she heard Silas squeak excitedly, "Wake up, Aspen!" Rouge found herself standing a little too close to Aspen, and backed up a step, bumping hard into Mott, who wrapped his arms around her comfortingly. Aspen was swaying and blinking, while Silas flew around his head, the wind from her wings disturbing his sweaty hair. Aspen put a hand to his head and groaned. "What just happened?" Laughter erupted around him, and absolutely everyone went in for a group hug. Even Cor. Though they hurried, by the time they got back to refuge, the battle was all but over. They passed the gruesome remains of the bone golems not far down the road, so they had some idea what to expect. It seemed that when Akuji was defeated, most of the monsters began to behave erratically, attacking everyone, including their former allies. Others simply collapsed into fertile earth or piles of component parts, while some fled the battlefield entirely. Many of the NPC cultists, including all of the remaining Panganoon, fought on until the end, but once the players saw that the balance of power had shifted, the majority of them changed sides in hopes of being allowed to enter refuge after the battle. Some of the dedicated PKERs just started killing anyone they could reach, while those who had sworn high-level oaths to Apophis found that they couldn't stop fighting even if they wanted to. However, the tide had been turned by the arrival of the artisans, crafters, and the casual players, who hadn't wanted to get involved in the big confrontation, until the mighty Chan made his offer of a unique item. The players had swept through the battlefield, relieving the remaining Justat and Doom Bloom, who was the only one of Rouge's friends to survive until the end. Apparently, Flu Flu had almost made it, but a Panganoon managed to corner her, and the archer hadn't been able to defend herself in the close quarters combat long enough for Doom to rescue her. When Rouge, Aspen, and the others arrived, isolated pockets of fighting were still going on, but most of the battlefield was a charnel ground being picked over by vultures, humanoid and otherwise. Aspen looked over the carnage, his expression grim, and began casting Detect Evil, Winnow, and Clarity over and over as quickly as they became available. Perfumed breezes swept over the battlefield, momentarily pushing away the scent of death, as Gina's power broke Apophis's control over the remaining cultists. Many of the travelers who had been under a compulsion debuff immediately logged off, their zombies simply standing, staring blankly into space, or whistling for their horses and riding off to the south, depending on what commands they had been given. It was strange and rather eerie to see the blank-faced people carelessly standing amongst the slaughter. Rouge and the others joined in to defeat the last few attackers, but more and more of their attention was taken by prisoners, as those affected by Aspen's skills simply stopped fighting and knelt in the dirt. Many of them began crying, especially the warped ones like Rothgan, Hala, Esli, Kej and Zen. Many of them had been taken from their homes or caravans, and remembered little between the time of their abduction and the moment their spirits were released from Apophis's grip. Manuela would have a lot of soul healing to do. The children would be glad not to receive near-daily checkups from the bored doctor, but the reason for their respite was disheartening, to say the least. As soon as it was clear that all that was left was cleanup and healing, Mott came to find Rouge. His armor was filthy and a few straps had snapped. There was a visible dent over his heart, where something powerful had attempted to break through his shell, but otherwise he seemed fine. His expression said that he was feeling conflicted about something, however. "Rouge, I?" She grinned up at him, tilting her head so her cheek leaned against Silas' head. The bat had come to her because Aspen was busy dealing with prisoners, which was boring, but the small creature was exhausted and sleeping fitfully. "You need to go, right?" Mott looked surprised, that eyebrow shooting toward his hairline. "How did you know?" She gave him a look. "The competition is over, right? Bridget won, and the champions should be able to log out. You want to go meet?" She flicked her eyes toward Aspen, where he was directing some guards as they helped a few of the black-skinned dwarves toward refuge. Hala was hovering nearby, her arm around another woman who was only distinguishable from her because of the tattered state of the armor she wore. Mott cleared his throat awkwardly. "As far as I can tell, that isn't going to happen right away. I mean, he doesn't seem any different." He looked questioningly at Rouge, and she looked around at the chaos that was slowly turning into order. "I've had my notifications minimized since we left refuge. All of them. I think it's cool to check now, so just give me a second." She looked at the notification count. 472 missed messages. Make that a minute. Hang on. Mott held up a hand. "It's okay. Do that once you're on Bluestones. Just check your messages and log out as soon as you can, all right? I promised Bridget that I'd go with her to meet Ah," he lowered his voice and made air quotes, "Chester once he was out. They have a history and she wants to talk to him, but not alone. Plus he doesn't know about Amy and she's not sure how he'll take the news, but I guess he and his dad have a strained relationship and Bridget doesn't want Mr. Landon to break the news." Rouge's eyes were huge. "Oh my gosh, Dad. I didn't even think of that. I totally knew Bridget and Harkness used to be engaged, but I guess I thought that was all over. Plus, how could they not find a way to tell him about his sister? Holy cats. That poor guy. Yeah, head on out." Mott nodded but hesitated. "Look, it's getting pretty late, IRL. I may not be home until tomorrow after work, and I may have to turn off my screen again, but don't worry. Just stay home and go to school like usual tomorrow, okay? Can you handle that?" She glared. "I am not a kid." "Yes, of course I can handle it. Just," she glanced away, swallowing hard. "Dad, be careful, okay?" He smiled reassuringly. "I'm just going with a friend for moral support. What can go wrong?" She smacked his arm, then shook her hand as it tingled. "Probably took damage from that," she sighed internally. "Stupid armor. Never say that. Never, ever, ask what can go wrong, or say that something is a piece of cake. You're just asking for trouble." Mott grinned broadly. "Piece of cake," he said, just before his eyes went blank. As Rouge stared after his zombie, appalled, he turned and marched back through the now open gate to refuge, no doubt headed for the guest room in the castle where he'd been sleeping. She just hoped none of the new refugees were sleeping there, or they'd be in for a rude awakening. Silas looked up at Rouge, yawning adorably. "Is everything okay? Who's Bridget?" Rouge grimaced, realizing that she and Mott had been talking out loud. Of course, at the moment that was more private than party chat, given how many people were in the group. "Bridget's a friend of ours in our world. She has an old boyfriend who's been sick, and while he was sick his sister died. Mott's going to go be there when she tells him, because sometimes it helps to have another person around for something like that, just to keep people from getting too upset." Silas nodded sagely, silver ear tufts fluttering gently in the breeze. "That's really nice." Rouge snorted a little. "Yeah, he kinda likes Bridget's mom, so don't give him too much credit." Silas giggled. "Would he go, even if he didn't like her mom?" Sighing, Rouge nodded. "Of course he would. He should have had at least 8 more kids. He has way too much dad in him for just one. He takes care of everybody." The bat snuggled down against Rouge's neck. "That's really nice," she said again and fell asleep. Rouge got back to work. It was more than 2 hours later, before they were certain they had found the last of the survivors. The citizens of refuge were going around in trios of one guard and 2 regular citizens, checking and looting bodies. Everyone had a few healing potions from the stash Rouge had acquired when she had briefly been rich, way back in Bright. Almost all of the travelers had logged off, and since there was no Traveler's Guild or Dead Tent in refuge yet, Most of their zombies were sitting or standing around, though a few were lucky enough to have a tent left even after the siege. Even Doombloom was gone for the night. It was 2 hours earlier on the West Coast, but it was still after 11, and Doom had class in the morning. Her parting words to Rouge were, "Go to bed," but Rouge just waggled her fingers goodbye and continued helping Aspen and the others. The Justat and Auntie Lig wouldn't let Sarave step off the Bluestones, and Aspen's skills were desperately needed outside, so the two hadn't been able to reunite yet. Every time Rouge got close enough to the gate to be able to look, however, the Goblin Queen was standing there, eyes fixed on Aspen wherever he was. When Aspen finally came to find Rouge, his face was drawn and tired, with deep shadows beneath his eyes and cheekbones. He had found a hat somewhere, and the thing was already filthy and ragged. It was at least made of cloth and not dried grass, so that was an improvement, though she suspected it wouldn't last long. Silas, who had woken from a nightmare certain that Aspen was still dead, was curled in the tattered collar of his shirt, which he'd pulled away from his neck and chest to form a sort of pouch for the anxious bat. Aspen held out his hand. "Are you ready to go home?" Aspen asked, looking longingly toward the gate. She smiled, wondering what her own face looked like. Travelers could certainly look tired and dirty, but not quite in the very realistic way that the locals did. "Yeah. If Mott was still here, he'd be sending me to bed, and I have school in." She glanced at the clock at the top of her interface and grimaced, 6 hours. "Will you be all right?" Aspen asked as she accepted his hand. "Yee." The rest of the word came out as a yelp as the world swirled around them. Cinnamon and citrus-scented wind tugged at her curls, and her feet lifted into the air until her toes dangled. Glimmers of rainbow-colored sparkles surrounded them in a blinding blizzard, and she was abruptly dropped back onto a soft surface, making her stumble. "Oops! Hang on," a vaguely familiar voice said. The tempest stopped abruptly, and Rouge saw that they were in Gina's garden, though Gina herself was nowhere to be seen. Instead, Amy stood there, dressed in the white toga-like dress that Emily usually wore when playing the part of Emmalou, Gina's assistant. Soft white flowers wound through Amy's brown curls, and her freckled nose was flushed with embarrassment. "Sorry, I'm still getting the hang of this," she said, shrugging apologetically. "It looks like I'm going to be, taking over for Gina for a while, kind of." She turned toward Aspen, who was looking more than a little shocked by this turn of events. "Anyway, I'll let you guys go in just a minute, but I wanted to talk to you, especially." Green eyes sad, she took a step, looking up into Aspen's eyes. Taking a deep breath, Amy said formally, "Aspen, you have earned your place as Gina's champion. Though she cannot come to you now, she sent me to give you her thanks, and to ask if there is anything she can do for you as some small return for your efforts." Aspen took off his hat, clutching it to his chest, for all the world looking like a particularly handsome, though deeply grungy, hick farmer. His voice, however, was the one he used when he was being Duke Yorga's Pembroke, and the discrepancy nearly made Rouge giggle. "Two things, if I may?" Amy chuckled, a little. "Of course." Aspen held up a finger. "First, that refuge should be placed under Gina's protection. It will be a blessed city, so long as Sarave or her direct descendants rule there." Amy nodded, and her eyes went a little distant. "I can do that. It'll take a little work figuring out the code and forcing through a patch, but it's definitely doable. What else?" Poor Aspen looked a little confused, but forged ahead anyway, turning his forefinger in to point at his chest. "Get this thing out of me." Amy's robust laughter pealed out, startling clouds of butterflies, so they rose from the lush bushes of jasmine and peonies that surrounded the trio. "That's exactly why you were summoned here, Aspen. Though I think she might object to being called a thing." The new goddess, demigoddess? Angel, reached out and placed a hand just above Aspen's heart. Slowly, a shimmering ball of light emerged from his chest, and Amy gently closed her fingers around it, cradling it carefully in her palm. "Done," she said and smiled. "Are you sure there's nothing else?" Aspen shook his head, an expression of sheer relief on his face. "I won't have any more, he looked away, cheeks flushing deep red, "strange thoughts?" Amy laughed again. "From here on in, your thoughts are entirely your own. Your life belongs to no one but you now, Aspen. Live it well. With that, she reached out and tapped a finger to Aspen's grimy forehead, and he vanished. Rouge stared at the space Aspen had been occupying for two long breaths, and then turned to Amy. There was a question that had been burning at the back of her brain for a while now, though even if she'd had the opportunity to ask it, she probably wouldn't have. The time had come, however, and she braced herself. Does this mean Aspen will just be a normal NPC now? I mean a quest NPC or whatever, but will he lose his? She waved her hand uncertainly, not even sure how to properly ask the question. Amy's smile was understanding. No. Bridget allocated his process, quite a large chunk of system resources. Not like me, she gestured to her body self-deprecatingly, but quite a lot. One of the functions of his program is to give other programs with whom he interacts often more autonomy as well. So as long as he continues to spend time with your other native friends, they, too, will remain as you know them. Unfortunately, if they leave, or Aspen does, they will return to the level of a high-priority quest NPC over time. Rouge nodded jerkily. I understand. So Aspen, Silas, Kor, Sarave and the rest? Kor, Sumi and Silas are all part of Aspen, as is his soulbound staff, though he won't be able to pull off that little trick again. Even if they leave, they will retain their status as well, though they can't grant others greater autonomy in the same way Aspen can. Amy raised one eyebrow and looked at Rouge curiously. Now I have a question. Rouge's own brows shot up, but she nodded. Aren't you ever going to check your notifications? Amy's voice was a little plaintive, like a child who had been promised a treat that was still sitting on the kitchen counter until they ate the last of their carrots. Rouge laughed. Oh yeah. I guess I'm just a little overwhelmed, you know? That's a lot to go through, even if I dismiss all the you dealt combat notices. She looked down at her toes, wiggling them a little in their soft leather footpad boots. I think I'm a little scared too, she admitted softly. It's all over now, right? Somewhere in there is my quest completion notice, and once I see that, it's really done. She looked up, waving her hands as if to ward off misunderstanding. I mean, I'm glad it's over, don't get me wrong. Especially since we won. But that's been my life for close to a year in-game, and for several months in the real world. Without it, I never would have met Aspen, or Bridget, or gotten the job at Veritas, or any of it. Heck, maybe I would have joined the cult in Bright, just to see what it was all about. Rouge thought about that, then made a face. Nah, those guys were mean and creepy. I definitely wouldn't have gotten involved with them, except maybe as part of some kind of resistance. I could have been like Princess Leia. Amy laughed, green eyes twinkling. I'm so glad I got to meet you, Rouge. She hesitated. May I call you Zoe? I know you don't like to use real names while you're playing, but, she sighed, it gets a little lonely in here, especially since only you, Mott and Bridget know who I really am. By which she meant, an AI created from the recorded brain of Bridget's deceased best friend. Rouge nodded, because she'd decided a while ago not to worry too much about what exactly Amy was, other than a good person. Absolutely. I'd love to just hang out sometimes, and if you ever want to, you know, play the game, we can totally do some quests together. I'll introduce you to Doom. She's awesome, and you can join her guild. She said there's always someone online to chat with or run quests together. Amy's smile was a little watery, and she swiped at one eye. That sounds great. I'm still figuring out exactly what my, she waved a hand around, role here is going to be, but I could definitely use some friends. Done, Rouge said firmly. You're going to have more friends than you know what to do with. Sounds great, Amy smiled. Now, before I send you back to check those notices, do you have any more questions? Two actually, Rouge said tentatively, eyeing the gleaming ball of light Amy was still holding gently in one hand. Amy held up the mote. I can guess one. Yes, this is Bree Stevenson's avatar at the moment. She and the Yorga's Penbrooke NPC were merged. The process is called the coma protocol. The conscious part of the player is suspended, and they forget their own lives for a while. This allows them to become the NPC for some period of time. It was originally my idea, to let people who have traumatic memories come to terms with them in a healthy way. We discovered how to do it while studying coma patients, thus the name. Her lips twitched into a wry smile. Rather ironic, given how Amy Landon died. She sounded wistful as she continued. I wonder if our system would have worked to reach me, if Bridget had been allowed to try. She shook her head dismissively. What's done is done, though. Father was never one to listen to anyone else's ideas, unless he gained something from them. I guess he couldn't see what he had to gain by letting Bridge experiment on me. She laughed a little bitterly, eyes dark. In any case, when I let the system know Bree's quest has been completed, it will return her to her default avatar, though she gets quite a few unique player benefits from being part of Aspen for the past several months. I'll do that after I send you back since I want to, her voice choked a little, talk to her myself. She is very important to me. She treated me like her own daughter when Bridge brought me home, trailing after her like an abandoned puppy. Chuckling, Amy gently poked the ball of light, which twinkled in response. Your dad actually reminds me of her a lot. They both had difficult relationships with their first loves, and then were left with a child to raise essentially alone. They did their absolute best as parents, and still somehow had so much love to give that they could take in all the lost souls their children found along the way. Of course, Amy raised a brow and gave the mote a chastising look. They forgot about themselves somewhere along the way. Or maybe they're just too scared to try again, and it's easier to hide behind their need to take care of their kids. She lifted the shimmering sphere and eyed it critically. Bridge and I spent quite a bit of time on Bree and Aspen's plotline. Bree is incredibly stubborn, Bridge had to get it from somewhere and it wasn't her dad, and she insists she never wants to even date again. Aspen was supposed to fall for Sarave, allowing Bree to be in a healthy relationship for a while. Aspen followed script but Bree she cast a sidelong look at Rouge, we'll see. Things got a bit more complicated than intended, anyway. Amy grinned broadly, clearly amused by something. Did that answer your questions? Rouge felt dizzy with all the information she'd just had thrown at her, and nodded, then shook her head. One more thing? Amy cocked her head to one side curiously. Go ahead. Who is Apophis? Bridget played Gina. And a tie, Amy said laughing. What? Amy shrugged. I was supposed to be Gina, and Bridget was supposed to run a tie, but, she waved a hand eloquently, that didn't happen, so Bridget played both parts. But what you want to know is, what real-world person played Apophis, right? Rouge nodded. We don't know. That person was selected by my father, and while we have our suspicions, they always used a pod in Dr. Veralt's lab to access the game. They were designed to be tamper-proof, and we couldn't trace the account. She grinned triumphantly. Once I became Emily, though, I was able to get access to the security system in the Veritas buildings. While we have no proof, there is one person who always entered the lab not long before Apophis showed up. You even know him. She stopped and Rouge waited with bated breath. Finally, gasping for air, she asked, do I have to guess? Amy burst out laughing. No, I'll tell you. It was Philip Clayton Harris, Jr. In design, most people just call him Harris. Rouge's mouth dropped open. Harris. Harris with the buck teeth and hamster fetish? That Harris? Blinking in surprise, Amy nodded. He's the son of one of my father's old cronies. Hank, Phil, Georgie, and I all grew up together. Phil's dad was a misogynistic jerk, but he loved animals. Anyway, when Phil and Georgie grew up, they were, she pondered, kind of spoiled. All of our folks were filthy rich, but they never had much time for us. They wanted heirs more than kids. Hank and Georgie were about the same age, and they even dated for a while in high school, but Phil and I never really hit it off. He fell head over heels for Bridget the first time he met her, though. Of course, he met her at the party Dad threw when she and Hank got engaged, so that was a lost cause from the beginning. He and Georgia really bonded over their unrequited love. Amy rolled her eyes. Rouge raised a hand. Wait, Georgie is Georgia? Georgia McKean. From HR? Amy nodded. Georgia always hoped she could rekindle the flame or whatever she had with Hank before they went to college. So she asked Dad for a job as soon as she graduated. Phil was a programmer for one of his dad's foundations until he met Bridget, and then suddenly he felt a compulsion to start developing video games. I don't think Bridget even realized just how bad he had it, because she always treats him like a cute kid with an inappropriate crush. Rouge winced, thinking of Lyric and his many inappropriate crushes. He always thought he had a chance, because the person he was crushing on was too nice to just squash him like a bug. In her experience, it was better to be nice, but very clear about that kind of thing. Lyric would have been spared a lot of heartache and humiliation if he'd just been told from the beginning that he didn't have a chance. Some pieces clicked together in Rouge's head. Okay, but how sure are you that Harris is Apophis? Like 50%? 90? Amy shrugged. 95? I reviewed all of Apophis's interactions with Gina, and it sure looked like he was trying to impress her in the same kind of way Harris does whenever he gets a little courage in him. Like I said, his dad was a chauvinist, and Phil only saw one kind of interaction between men and women. She flexed a bare arm, the panels of the toga sleeve draping down gracefully. Me big strong man, you little weak woman. You do what I say, and I protect you. Grr. Rouge giggled. She could definitely see what had attracted the too serious Bridget to this upbeat and cheerful woman. Too many things were coming together in her mind, though, and she found that she had one more question after all. Amy, do you know Philip Clayton Harris III? Amy's face drained of humor and she suddenly looked pale. How do you know that name? Rouge shook her head stubbornly. You first. The pseudo-goddess nodded slowly. Phil had an older sister, Philippa, from Senior's first marriage. Philippa was smart and talented, but of course, she was just a girl, so she was only good for making babies. Well, she did exactly that with a boy from her high school, and that was about the end of the world for Phil Senior. She grimaced. He insisted she marry the boy, and when she refused, he cut her off. She named the baby after her dad, hoping that it would be enough to buy her way back into his good graces. But by then, Phil Jr. had been born, and Senior didn't need a male heir anymore. Still, Phil and Philip weren't that far apart in age, and little Third would come over and play sometimes. He was, she shuddered. Well, he was a lot like his grandfather, except that he didn't even like animals. Her green eyes sharpened on Rouge. But how do you know him? Rouge drew in a deep breath. He works for Dr. Verrault now, and Amy, she stopped, not wanting to frighten the woman, but well, what could Philip do to her now? I think he may be. My friend found this note and your name was on it but crossed off, and it was to him, and I think, Rouge swallowed hard. I think it's possible that he killed you.